Welcome to this edition of the Fireside Bookshelf. Join our host Ginger Green as she opens doors to the literary world, both past and present, featuring some of the best Christian books pertinent to believers and their pursuit of biblical truth. Each week, she will discuss selected resources which have touched her heart and life, with a hope they will enhance your study of the scriptures and encourage you in your spiritual walk. From foundational Christian truths to marriage and parenting, to understanding the times we live in, Ginger has assembled some amazing Christian authors, and each week we'll explore their works, all designed to help us grow in grace and knowledge in Jesus Christ. And now for today's presentation.
There are moments in every life when in that moment something so profound occurs in a person's life that it is fundamentally changed forever. The point of salvation is obviously one, but some others come in the most unexpected ways. It probably sounds melodramatic to some when I say that a book I read sometime around my sophomore year in college changed my outlook on life forever. But for some of you who have had an experience like this at some point in your life, you understand exactly what I'm talking about. You read something, and suddenly things click, and the author's message causes you to see things in a whole new light. I'm not exactly sure where I came upon the book. I probably found it at the Christian bookstore that my mom's dear friend owned and where my mom had worked off and on during my younger years. In the summertime, when I was off from school, I would often join her while she worked at the bookstore. It was one of my most favorite things to do. Being surrounded by a store full of books was always like a great adventure for me. My mother didn't work for money. She was always paid in books, and the owner became like a second mother to her and like a grandmother to me. The name of the owner, Betsy Wilson. The name of the bookstore, the Fireside Bookshelf. She was a great influence in our lives, and it is in honor of her friendship and memory that this program was named. Even after my mother stopped working there, we continued to patronize the store, and it was always a treat to be able to stop by and see Miss Betsy whenever I was home from college. I believe it was on one of these such occasions that I first came across the book which made such a marked impact on my life. So come be a part as we seek out the life-changing message of You Gotta Keep Dancing, written by Tim Hansel. Let me begin with some background information about our author, Tim Hansel, courtesy of the SummitAdventure.com website. Through the 60s, Tim was teaching social studies at a public high school in California and was growing increasingly disturbed by the lack of motivation and apathy shown by the students. He wondered if a weekend camping trip would help. Amazed at the transformation that occurred, Hansel began to take groups of high school students into the wilderness, at first for a weekend, but the trips grew longer and longer. His initial forays convinced him of the effectiveness of outdoor, experiential-based education and led to the formation of the Summit Expedition in 1973, one of the earliest wilderness-based ministries in the United States. Throughout the 70s, Summit continued to grow, taking hundreds of students into the wilderness. Although the ministry was impacting many people, finances were always a concern, forcing Hansel to work as many as four jobs at a time. In addition, he married, fathered two children, embarking on the adventure of marriage and fatherhood. Several years after he founded Summit, Hansel and another instructor had completed a climb on the North Palisade Peak in Sierra Nevada. Descending from the glacier in the late afternoon, Hansel's crampons balled up with snow and caused him to fall into the crevice, landing heavily on his back and neck. Although he got up and hiked the 20 miles to the car, the damage unknowingly was done. Cracked vertebrae, crushed discs, fragments of bone lodged into his neck. The result was chronic, debilitating pain that would be with him for the next 35 years. The book is written with a combination of excerpts from Tim's journal and his personal commentary. The reality of the true struggles he and his family would face provide for a truly compelling and moving account. And so his journey began. Tim writes, "Sharing personal journals is a bit like opening one's underwear drawer in public. You're not quite sure what you will find, and there is a strong chance that you will be embarrassed. My journal keeping was never done with the thought that it would be shared with others. It was simply my attempt at catharsis and clarity as I sought to find a pattern amid the pain and confusion. But as these words from Tolstoy suggest, there is value in honest sharing. A writer is dear and necessary for us only in the measure of which he reveals to us the inner workings of his very soul. Entry, Fall, 1974. Bad news. Like Jacob, I've wrestled with God and lost, and may be lame for the rest of my life. Looks like I may have to hold on to him long enough for him to bless me too. The doctor said he was not surprised that now that the shock had worn off, that I would be experiencing some rather intense pain. He called that one right. I suppose in the long run, I'm just grateful to be alive. As I look back on it, I'm very fortunate to still be around, and can't believe I'm still able to move all of my limbs. It all depends on how you look at it. Perhaps I'm blessed beyond measure just to still be here. I feel almost dismembered this morning by outrageous pain. It is almost comical to have reached such a ludicrous level of disorder. Me, with my desire to be agile and free, barely able to get up and out of the chair this morning. Teach me to live in new ways, Lord. Teach and show me your ways in the midst of this. In times like these, of such intense physical pain, confusion, and doubt, one must simply decide and do, and laugh a bit in the midst of the consequences. Pain. We all know what it tastes like. Whether its source is physical, emotional, mental, or spiritual, its interruption in our lives disrupts and reshapes. It intercepts our hopes and plans. It rearranges our dreams. It always leaves a mark. I realize again each day that all of our lives are terminal. Only time and quality differ. The choice of all of us is not if we will accept pain, but how. Entry, Summer, 1975. I go into the hospital Monday morning again for tests and such. Despair. So real. So deep. I had a choice. I knew by now that the damage was permanent and that the pain would be a companion for the rest of my journey. I have to learn a whole new way of living or fold up my cards. The deck was stacked. The life I had always known was never to be again. Slowly my rage to live emerged from the depression, frustration, and anger. I began to relish small, daily, simple things, and realized at a depth that never seemed possible that all life is sacred. There were moments, though sporadic and far apart, when I began to understand that life wasn't over for me, but perhaps was just the beginning. Entry, Fall, 1975. If you can't change circumstances, change the way you respond to them. I'm not sure which was the hardest to deal with, the pain or the doubt, frustration, and fear. All life's questions seem to be intensified. The disillusionment of our own abilities is, perhaps, one of the most important things that can ever happen to us, but the process can be terrifying. I was being stretched in so many different directions at once, struggling to surrender and fully accept what was inevitable, and yet wanting to know where and how to fight it as well. There seemed to be a fine line between giving up and giving in. Entry, Summer, 1976. You think the fear will go away, but it doesn't. What a test of character adversity is. It can either destroy or build up, depending on your chosen response. Pain can either make us better or bitter. I knew I had come to a critical place in my life. I had to choose either to break down or break through. All of our theology must eventually become biography. The constant challenge in this life we call Christian is the translation of all we believe to be true into our day-to-day lifestyle. My accident, I began to realize, was more than just an interruption in my life, more than just a meddlesome interlude. It was a major intersection. The crossroads force a choice, but the choice was neither easy nor obvious. At times, the best I could do was muddle. Entry, Fall, 1976. My frustration is almost as high as it's ever been, Lord. What does it mean to surrender all of these feelings to you? One of the problems with pain is that it's so myopic. Nothing robs one's strength and vitality as much as self-absorption. There is no greater waste of time than self-pity, preoccupation with self. It fragments and dissipates that which you want to be about. Oh God, you seem to have the only keys that can unlock me from myself. Woke up again in the middle of the night in sickening pain, unable to sleep, struggling to thank him for all of this. There continued to be days and nights where the pain seemed so unceasing that I didn't know what to do. Without knowing it, I was being reduced to the bare essentials of faith. Entry, Winter, 1976. Faith plus nothing equals that which pleases God. Faith isn't really faith until it's all you're holding on to. Lord, when I want you least, I need you most. The pain didn't decrease as I, in spite of the doctor's statements, had hoped it would, but I did begin to learn new ways to respond to it. Entry, Spring, 1977. He who laughs, lasts. My rage to live was real, but I have, without knowing or intending it, put a lid on it by saying to myself, when I'm strong, then I'll be joyful. When the pain eases, then I'll be joyful. I had enough excuses to last a lifetime. The problem was reality. The pain didn't subside, and I had placed myself in the position of waiting until things got better, waiting until I knew more of God, waiting until I had enough strength to be joyful. But through the profound and simple message of Nehemiah 8:10, the joy of the Lord is my strength, God reminded me again and again that I cannot choose to be strong, but I can choose to be joyful. And when I am willing to do that, strength will follow. I began to realize that it wasn't my imposed limitations that held me back as much as my perception of those limitations. It wasn't the pain that was thwarting me as much as my attitude toward the pain. I realized that though the difficulties were undeniably real and would remain so for the rest of my life, I had the opportunity to choose a new freedom and joy if I wanted to. The word happiness comes from the same root as the word happening, suggesting that happiness is based on something happening to us. Happiness is circumstantial. Now, there's nothing wrong with happiness. It's wonderful. The only problem is that it's based on circumstances, and circumstances have a tendency to shift. Most people who live with chronic pain or chronic problems have a hard time being happy. This is to be expected. Although there are moments of laughter, nothing seems to stay. Joy, on the other hand, is something which defies the circumstances and occurs in spite of difficult situations. Whereas happiness is a feeling, joy is an attitude, a posture, a position, a place. It is the byproduct of a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. It is a promise, not a deal. It is available to us when we make ourselves available to Him. It is something that we can receive by invitation and by choice. It requires commitment, courage, and endurance. Joy is free, but it is not cheap, Tim reminds us. Joy often costs pain and suffering. True joy isn't found at the end of the rainbow, isn't captured at the top of the ladder of success. Its price tag is faithfulness, endurance, and perhaps sorrow. It has been suggested that our cup of joy can only be as deep as our cup of sorrow. Pain is inevitable, but our misery is optional. We cannot avoid pain, but we can avoid joy. God has given us such immense freedom that He will allow us to be as miserable as we want to be. I know some people who spend their lives practicing being unhappy, diligently pursuing joylessness. They get more mileage from having people feel sorry for them than from choosing to live out their lives in the context of joy. Joy is simple, not to be confused with easy. At any moment in life, we have at least two options. One of them is to choose an attitude of gratitude, a posture of grace, a commitment to joy. Our country was founded on the pursuit of happiness, grew and developed in the pursuit of excellence, and now has come to be dominated by the pursuit of trivia. We are a nation of people consumed by having. We want to have not only material things, but facts. We want to have knowledge. We want to have information. We want to have love and inspiration. We want to have happiness and have abundance. Ownership seems to be the king of virtues, no matter what the commodity. And yet, we are a society of notoriously unhappy people, lonely, anxious, depressed, dependent. One of the problems is that we've forgotten that God created us as beings, not as doings. Our goal, in this life, should be to be much, not have much. There is something very special about life, Tim shares, but many people, in fact most, miss it. In our overemphasis on important things, we often overlook the intrinsic value of life itself. We have confused form with essence. We have placed our supreme value on surface things and have forgotten the substance. We have begun to believe the radio and TV commercials and have put so many overlays on our life that we can no longer see the fine-grained texture of everyday life itself, the mystery of the ordinary. Tim asks, have we forgotten how special Wednesdays can be? Have we forgotten how different November is when trees appear in the lean economy of leafless elegance? Have we somehow fallen into the rut where we think all Mondays are dreary and that February is a particularly difficult month? Have we gotten trapped into comparisons and ingratitude? Are we in the habit of always putting off an experience until we can afford it or the time is right? Procrastinating over the joy of being alive is one of the greatest burglars of life I know. So let us remember, as Tim asserts, life is sacred, life is short, life is funny, life is difficult. Most of the Psalms were born in difficulty. Most of the epistles were written in prison. Most of the greatest thoughts of the greatest thinkers of all time have passed through the fire. Sometimes it seems that when God is about to make preeminent use of a man, he puts him through the fire. Many people live as though they regret God's incredible invitation to live, Tim reflects. Avoiding pain becomes their chief occupation, and few of them realize that avoidance of difficulty only produces more pain in the long run. I believe that pain and suffering can either be a prism or a prison, Tim declares. The tests of life are not to break us, but to make us. We are called not to flinch from real trouble, for the greater part of life occurs in the inner man. Tim proclaims limitations are not necessarily negative. In fact, they can give life definition, clarity, and freedom. We are called to a freedom of and in limitations, not from. Unrestricted water is a swamp. Because it lacks restriction, it also lacks depth. Tim reminds us of the advantages of disadvantages. A certain measure of our maturity lies in the full dimension of acceptance, of allowing the transitions that are difficult but necessary to take place. Another advantage of disadvantages is that we have the opportunity to be transformed by our suffering. It is not possible to remain unchanged. To let others or circumstances dictate your future is to have chosen. To allow pain to corrode your spirit is to have chosen. And to be transformed into the image of Christ by these difficult, trying circumstances is to have chosen. If we are but willing to learn, our disadvantages can renew a deeper appreciation for the simple things in life. What we have traditionally perceived as limitations are sometimes the lenses which can bring our life into deeper and finer focus. Few of us fully recognize the work of grace in our lives, yet God wants more than anything for us to experience it with as much fullness as we can handle. Why do so many miss it? In You Gotta Keep Dancing, Tim suggests several reasons. 1. We often get stuck in the service of life. We get caught up with the doing to the exclusion of the being element of our faith. 2. Our insistence on self-sufficiency, an apparently harmless tendency, keeps us from a greater sense of completeness than we could ever imagine. 3. Our avoidance of pain inadvertently closes the door to the life and grace that we were seeking at the deepest levels. A clenched fist cannot receive, folded arms cannot embrace. Our fear of pain blocks our ability to hear God at the deepest levels. Our limitations can become the very invitation to discover fully the dimensions of grace, the improbable path to God's otherwise hidden blessing. God does His good work within us, and He wants to continue to expand it, not because of who we are, but because of who He is. That which appears to us to be a limitation can actually become our unexpected advantage and asset. As we are forced to our knees once again, we discover the holy and wonderful gift of life. Tim dares to indicate that there are, in fact, assets to disability if we have the courage to look at them as such. But there are also serious liabilities, and it is important to recognize these as well, so we can anticipate the difficulties and learn proper mechanisms for coping with them. Pain has many byproducts that can sneak up on us if we are not aware. There is a section in the book that discusses the byproducts of pain and offers some very real help on how to deal with them. Joy is a process, a journey, often muffled, sometimes detoured, a mystery in which we participate, not a product we can grasp. It grows and regenerates as we have the courage to let go and trust the process. Growth and joy are inhibited when we say, "if only," but enhanced when we realize that failures and difficulties are not only a critical part of the process, but are the very opportunities to grow. In the book of Job, it says that God will test us and try us until we come forth as gold, Job 23:10. Someone once asked the goldsmith how long he kept the gold in the fire. His reply, "until I can see my face in it." In his marvelous and mysterious way, God keeps shaping us until he can see himself in our lives. The process is long, arduous, complex, and certainly not painless, but it is worth it. And we need not wait until the conclusion to celebrate. We can, if we choose, genuinely celebrate the process. Tim writes, "This book is about life, real life. There is a delicate balance between being honest and being overly dramatic. I want to admit struggle without giving way to despair, and I want the ultimate message to be positive without sounding pious or tinny. Stress, disappointment, heartache, hurt, all are part of the human condition. But while pain is unavoidable, misery is optional. The pain in my personal journey has been all too real, but so has the joy. This book is in no way meant to diminish the awfulness of pain, tragedy, and affliction. I don't want to celebrate pain, but more deeply understand the dignity of what can happen in it, through it, and because of it. I want this book to offer some hope to those who suffer, for whatever reason, but I don't intend it as advice. It's hard to be self-righteous when you've been broken, at times almost completely, by the process. But the freeing message of you gotta keep dancing is that no matter what your circumstances, with God's help, in the midst of life's hurts, you can choose joy. And as I said in the opening, there are moments in every life when in a moment something so profound occurs in a person's life that it is fundamentally changed forever. And in that moment, on a mountain, Tim's life changed forever. And after reading the incredible story of his journey through the pain, he helped me understand joy in such a way that my life was forever changed as well. At the tender age of 20, I came face to face with the truth that joy is a choice. Of course, what did I know of pain in those days? Truly nothing. But because a man had chosen to believe God's promise that he is sufficient for all of our needs, and was willing to share his personal journey with others, when pain and suffering eventually entered my life, as it will for all of us, I was able to remember to grab hold of that promise and choose joy. And for that, I will always be grateful to the Lord for his wonderful servant, Tim. You Gotta Keep Dancin' can generally be found through your local Christian bookstore or online in hardcover, paperback, and digital format. And one final note from the Fireside Bookshelf. None of the books outlined on this program are ever intended to replace the Bible and the need for immersing ourselves in God's Word on a daily basis. We are grateful, however, to be able to benefit from the stories and works of others that seek to remain faithful to biblical truth and provide insights to help strengthen and deepen our spiritual walk, and to be able to share those resources with you.
If today's featured book has sparked your interest or addressed an area of concern for you or a friend, we hope you will consider adding a copy to your library of Christian resources. Nowadays, when busyness seems to be our business, we need to return to the lost art of reading so that we will continue learning more of God's Word and His Son, Jesus Christ, the only one who has the power to transform hearts and minds. The Fireside Bookshelf is a ministry of Sharon Hearts and can be heard on this station every Sunday at 4 p.m. Past episodes can be found anytime at www.sharonhearts.org. Thank you for joining us, and tune in next week for our next exciting feature here at the Fireside Bookshelf.